Go to everydaynovelist.com/support to join the madness.
Welcome to the Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer, and what the hell, we're still here after all these years, talking creativity, business, art, discipline, and just about everything else we can think to cram into the writing life. Welcome to The Questions, episode 1104. Welcome back to the Everyday Novelist, sitting next to a fucking jet engine. Man, that fire just caught, and it sounds like we're sitting next to a jet engine in here. So,
it's please, a very efficient fire.
Yes, please forgive all the popping and crackling. I am J. Daniel Sawyer, and
I am Kitty Nakian.
And today we have a question from
Joe.
Today we have a question from Joe, who asks,
lots of young people want to be writers, but don't have enough life experience to write anything interesting. What ways do you recommend to gain that sort of life experience?
Funnily enough, I've just written a book on this topic. It won't be seeing the light of day till probably, June, I think we said we were going to do it?
I believe it was June or July.
June or July. But we just did a publishing calendar for the first time ever. Oh, my God.
But, oh, for the first time in a few years.
Amazing. Anyway, yeah, business shit. I'm figuring it out little by little. So, yeah, gaining life experience. Well,
do things.
Yeah, do things. Okay, there are three reasons that younger people don't have life experience. They have been inculcated with risk aversion, is reason number one. Reason number two is they have not been allowed to practice independence when they were young, and so they don't feel like they have any now that they're grown. And in fact, they don't have any, because independence isn't a state of being, it's actually a skill set. And number three, there's a question of social cost and ruination. Naval Ravikant, the venture capitalist, has a wonderful set of aphorisms that he uses to teach business. And one of the things he says is, don't risk ruin, but risk everything else. Ruin is when your life will be permanently disfigured in a disabling fashion. So his in business, he says the poison pill is getting sent to prison for a felony, especially something like a sexual crime, something with a real heavy social stigma. And his other thing is getting really deeply involved with the kinds of drugs that completely ruin your life. Other than that, there's not a whole lot you could do. I would add, try not to have children you can't take care of to that list, because that won't ruin your life, but it will create permanent obstacles. On the other hand, if you have unexpected children, that's life experience. Jump into it.
I think it's worth keeping in mind that the young always have less life experience because they're young.
Well, yes.
Because they've had less life.
But Joe is our age.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got friends that are in their late teens
mid-20s.
They do not have the life experience that I did when I showed up at college and met you.
Yeah, there is absolutely no doubt that this generation of young people have even less life experience than previous generations did at the same age. But the young always have less life experience.
Okay, that's true, but it's a deepity, right? It's true, but it's unimportant. In any case, Naval says don't risk ruin, but risk everything else. And that is a really good rule to go by. The risk aversion in the young, whether it is through inculcation or through crippling, manifests in a fear that everything is ruinous somehow. And the fairly simple remedy to that is, and simple, if you're struggling with this and you're a younger person, or even if you're an older person and you just had a crippling life, when I say simple, I don't mean easy. It's actually incredibly difficult to do this, but the remedy is very simple. When you find yourself feeling like, oh, I can't do that, that's dangerous, that scares me, it causes me anxiety, actually sit and ask yourself, what is the worst that could happen? And be ruthlessly realistic. I can't go to that party. What's the worst that could happen? Okay, well, if you got drunk and you're around people you don't know and you wind up passed out in an upper room with a lot of privacy, you might get raped. That's pretty bad. Won't ruin your life, but is not something you want to be carrying around if you can avoid it. So that's the worst that could happen. So make sure you don't get that drunk and then go to the party. And the worst that can happen is you're not going to have a brilliant time. Go to the party. Find out. You learn things about yourself through your discomfort. You learn things about what you value. You learn things about what you enjoy. You learn things that you never would have thought to explore about yourself. Things you didn't even know were there. In the same way that you learn things about yourself when you read a book or watch a movie or hear a song and you just come across something that either utterly repels you or utterly enthralls you. Both of those things, it's not the song doing it to you. It's not the song doing it to you. What it is the song is a mirror for what's going on inside yourself that you can't see because you're too close to it.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you a mirror to see part of yourself.
I was saying the other day that one thing I wish I had done when I was young is pay more attention to the songs that moved me.
Mm.
Like, actually pay attention to the words. Try to understand the lyrics. Let that seep in. Because there's a reason those songs are moving me.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason those songs are moving you. And it's because they're speaking to you on some level, that communicating something that is important to you. And it's worth paying attention to.
Absolutely is.
And to the movies that
very much
that,
so.
That make you laugh, make you cry, make you feel something.
And anything that helps you develop your taste, expand your taste, also helps you develop as a person. Even if, you know, and this is a very safe way to develop. Expand your palate as a customer, as an audience member. It will show you a lot more about life and a lot more emotional range and a lot more thematic range. It teaches you a lot about yourself. But it is important to do the things that feel risky.
Mm-hmm.
Because as you do things that feel risky and you don't die from them, you gain confidence. This is how people go from being terrified of heights to free climbing 80-foot walls on a granite rock, which I did at the age of 14.
Mm-hmm.
In the space of about 3 months. And I was still free climbing those heights when I was 250 pounds and we were dating when I was 20.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't 250 fit pounds. I was very flabby. But because I had had that experience with the risk, I knew how to manage the risk, both in the emotional sense and in the physiological sense. I got used to knowing how to cope with the adrenaline. And that, of course, globalizes. When you get used to managing the physiological states that come with risk, it raises your risk tolerance up to the level of reality all the way around. Because, you know, what, there's perceptible risk and there's actual risk. And the problem with perceptible risk is it causes anxiety, which causes massive adrenaline release, which can literally be crippling. But once you get used to physiologically handling the hormones that come with anxiety, your response to them attenuates. It goes down, just like you can develop a tolerance for spicy foods, or for alcohol, for that matter.
Mm.
And then you start to actually see what real limits look like, because you start to come up to reality. Well, with a few basic skills, free climbing an 80-foot solo pitch is not a big deal. But that same climber, with that same skill level and that same body-to-weight distribution, would be absolutely crazy to free solo a underclimb that's only 5 feet off the ground, because you can actually kill yourself doing that. You're very unlikely to fall off of a straight climb or even a slight back climb going up 80 feet if you know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But it is very easy to fall if you're just suspended by your fingertips on the jutting underside of a boulder. And if you fall 5 feet onto another piece of rock and you hit your head wrong, you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
That's what actual risk calculus looks like. Just like going out and when I was learning to drive, the guy that taught me to drive used to be British SAS, and he knew he knew all the stunt driving tricks, and he would give me hell for any time I did something stupid in a car. We had a very tight little canyon out where I lived, and it was very badly paved, and all of the curves were sloped the wrong way. And anytime I would be really, really stupid, he would make me go run that canyon. And he said, take every corner, double the advised speed, and add 10 miles an hour. And do it without dying. And that was my assignment. And I had to run that canyon 5 times back and forth, or once if I actually made the speed.
Mm. And keep in mind, this is when you're like 16, 17.
Yeah, I was only 16 years old. And I did it because I had been in the car with him and then with someone else who drove as well as he did a few times in the years leading up to getting my driver's license where there had been a life and death emergency. And he'd handled it, boom, absolutely cool as anything. Didn't even blink. Car did a 360 in the middle of a high traffic road. He popped it back into straight and kept going. And no other drivers even honked because he was so good managing the car's momentum when it went sideways like that on black ice. And I was sitting in the passenger seat and I said, you've got to teach me to drive like that. And he took me up on it and he really put me through the paces. And yeah, I risked my life learning to drive like that. But that learning to drive like that has saved my life at least 15 or 20 times in my life.
Uh-huh.
And you've been in the car on a few of those occasions.
Yes, and it has saved my life and the lives of some of our friends who have been passengers at certain times. And your coolness has frankly helped people who were driving, who weren't the passengers, when you weren't driving, because you kept a level head.
Yeah. By coolness, we don't mean I'm seriously cool. We're talking cool under pressure.
Yeah, although he is seriously cool.
Shh.
And you've saved the lives of people when you weren't even driving because you did not freak out and make them freak out.
Well, it certainly made their lives easier anyway.
Yeah.
But in any life, you've got your four major realms of risk. You've got financial, you've got interpersonal, you've got physical, and you've got emotional. And you want to develop a high risk tolerance in as many of those areas as possible, because a high risk tolerance allows you to evaluate risk honestly. One of the worst positions to be in is someone who is timid in a situation that calls for boldness, because you can ruin your life by being too careful. And all of this is important to getting life experience, because in order to become wise, and it is the job of the middle-aged person, what I am now, to be a wise person. You're supposed to spend the early part of your life getting a handle on yourself, and then your teens and early adulthood making a lot of really interesting mistakes and getting your heart broken and getting bruised and breaking a few bones, or at least spraining a few ankles if you have bones that don't break easily, and making career and financial mistakes and whatnot. You're supposed to do that because learning from your mistakes gives you the foundation to grow wisdom. You can acquire wisdom secondhand from reading books that are designed to teach you wisdom, like Meditations by Marcus Aurelius or certain parts of the Bible, or books of aphorisms like The Bed of Procrustes or The Notebooks of Lazarus Long, or talking to people who have been there, hopefully sometimes listening to this podcast, though I don't know if I'm confident enough to put that label on it, or by reading good novels that give you sort of vicarious life experience. But all of the experience of secondhand wisdom is very, very different if you have at least some firsthand wisdom, because almost always the secondhand wisdom is talking about more than it appears that it's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get to, you can memorize and internalize all the wisdom literature that you can get your hands on all day, every day, for your whole life. And then you go out into the world and you have an experience that changes how you understand what you've read. And that's when the wisdom becomes useful to you. And it's also how you develop sophistication. And as a writer, sophistication is like everything.
If you want an example of that kind of wisdom literature changing meaning, it's like when you watch a movie, a really good movie, when you're very young, and then 10, 20 years later, and it's a very different film. You're still getting something out of it. It's a different experience watching a good film with 10, 20, 30 years more life experience than the first time you saw it.
It's funny you bring that up. I was talking to one of my younger brothers about City Slickers. It was a comedy in the early 90s that was really popular. We loved it as kids. It's a movie about midlife crises. It's also a movie about cowboys and cowardly New Yorkers, which makes it a lot of fun. As teenagers, we enjoyed this movie, and we could tell it was about midlife crises. And one of the we sort of got acquainted with the concept of midlife crises through this movie and other movies like it. And as a kid, you pull the sort of lesson you pull out of a story like that is don't waste your youth because it'll be gone someday. It's a good lesson. Whatever you spend it on, make sure you're doing it on purpose. Don't just let the time pass you by. As a middle-aged person, it's a very different movie. It's not just, it's the gestalt is very different because you know what the midlife crisis feels like. Even if you're not having a particularly horrible one, you know the feeling of mortality starting to impinge.
Mm.
But as a middle-aged person, the takeaway from that film is don't waste your adult years on nostalgia. And that's a very different kind of wisdom to pull out of the same film. Mm. And it's there in both cases. It was there in the original script. It's not projection. But you have access to different kinds of wisdom depending on your levels of experience. And if you want to live well, let alone create really good art, you have to have mileage under your belt. And like Indiana Jones says, it's not the years, it's the mileage. You learn about how people work, how you work, through experience. And your level of experience gives you access to the wisdom of the ages in ways that you can immediately transmute into your art.
Yes.
And if you don't have life experience, you can have tremendous skill and still not make anything worth reading. Thank you very, very much for the question, Joe. And we'll see you tomorrow. The Everyday Novelist is written and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and Kitty Nakian and is distributed by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text and production are copyright 2024 J. Daniel Sawyer. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license, and all other rights are reserved to the author. All of you have made this podcast possible for the last few years with your support and with your questions. And now I'm going to ask you for one more thing, reviews. We've got to spread the word and get the Everyday Novelist out to the new generation of writers that are coming online and are lost, swimming out there on the internet with no hope of solidarity because, hey, the world's a fractious place. So if you could take a moment and leave a review at one or two places, or post about us on your favorite social media venues, we would be ever so grateful. We cannot do this without you.